Hello and welcome. I'll say three hellos because there's three of us in the room right now. So hello to everybody, including myself, and welcome to another episode of Game Over, the premier video game show hosted by two brothers, and in this case, a third person, not Matthew Menye. He is still away on special assignment. He's actually trying to become the first person to dig all the way through the Earth's core and come out the other side. So as always, we wish him all the best, and hopefully we see him soon.
I hope he didn't start here, because then he'll end up in the Pacific.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, he's prepared for... The way I've seen a couple Snapchats, he seems like he did, like, 2, maybe 3 hours of research on this, so he seems like...
he's ready.
He seems like he's pretty on the ball. Plus, okay. You know, he went to university. He did get a music degree, but I think... How hard is engineering, really? You know? People really just do it because they want a good-paying job. But it's not really difficult.
No,
we've got
no.
Computers for that kind of stuff, you know?
Yes.
That's how I see it. But anyway, I am your hostess with the mostest, Simon Pazdor, my faithful squad mates, Adam Pazdor, and over there in the corner, not really in the corner, this room is kind of round, but in the corner we have Megatron, Megalomania, Megalodon.
You got any more?
The three is good. I'm good with three if you are, but if you really want me to come on and drop some more, I could. How are you guys doing? Adam, how has your week been?
Very busy. Because of her, mostly. Because she moved house this weekend.
Yeah.
So that kept us busy.
Tis the season to be moving.
Yes, exactly.
Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la. Oh, no. Yeah. So, okay. That's luckily, in that one sentence, you've pretty much summarized both of your experience this past week. I have been playing, still playing Sacred Stones. To catch them on Fire Emblem because, I mean, we're not going to talk really about it this week, but Fire Emblem Three Houses is officially a sinking ship of leaking information. Where it's like, I'm going to watch every video that the Fire Emblem YouTubers put out about it because I want the content. But at this point, it's like, if you're going to keep releasing information, just please release the game. Like,
yeah.
Every week there's like a new, okay, yeah, this is what's going on here. So it's like, just... I know the game's coming out in a little over a month. I don't care.
Just give it to me.
I'm planning to be sick that day. Just give it to me. I don't care. So, yeah, but I'm playing Sacred Stones. Actually, really enjoying that. The farther I get in there, the more I'm enjoying it. It's weird to see how some mechanics sort of changed and evolved. And it's like, oh, this... It might have been in its infancy here, something that I took for granted when it was in Awakening or Fates or something like that. And also, you and I are playing Perfect Dark.
Yes, we are.
Perfect Dark. So... We love Perfect Dark.
We do.
And the love for it, I've realized, definitely goes beyond the game. But it's sort of interesting in that you and I are playing it on Special Agent, which is the middle difficulty. We're playing the co-op mode.
Yeah.
And first of all, when they remastered that game, which I encourage everyone to go out and try if you can find it for like $10 on the Xbox store. But when they remastered it, they made no effort to bring it up to date on the multiplayer mechanics because we had one mission where if you're playing single player... You knock out a stewardess, take her aircraft clothes, and then you sneak into an airport to get onto a plane. When you're playing co-op, you might think they give you two sets of the disguise. They do not.
Nope.
But they still spawn more enemies for you. So, you know, it's real fair. That took us quite a while to get through. And it's funny, I don't know about you, but when we're going through, like, we were like, shout out to our parents, I suppose, for having us at the perfect ages, where it was like, you were, in those olden days, just old enough to understand all the mechanics and order me around, and I was just old enough to understand the concept of point and shoot. You know?
Yeah.
And so if I think back on most of my favorite co-op games, and those ideas have even evolved into like how we play something like Minecraft, for example, where I just want to mine and you want to build. You know, it's that same idea of, okay, you do this because you can't really screw that up. So we're playing some of these missions. I'm like, I know my job here. It's been 20 years.
But
I still know my role. Go over here and shoot the guys that are trying to kill the president. I know what I got to do when you're going to take care of the escape shuttle and all that jazz. So even though a lot of my fondness comes purely from nostalgia, I'm still very much enjoying my drip down memory lane. That's going to get us into another topic, but first of all, how are you enjoying revisiting Perfect Dark?
It's a blast. It really is. I didn't remember it being this difficult, and that's because I think as a child I never turned the auto aim off.
Yeah.
And now as an adult I'm like, no, I've done Dark Souls. Surely I can aim a weapon.
Yeah.
And apparently not so much. But one of the things I really like is, and this is a thing that every shooter I played after Perfect Dark sort of disappointed me in this way, is Perfect Dark does a great job of having weapon variety mm-hmm. without them feeling like super gimmicky. Like yeah. the example people always give is Half-Life's gravity gun. Okay, yes, that's ridiculous and fun, but it's also, like, it's way out there.
Yeah.
Every gun in Perfect Dark is a gun, but they all feel distinct.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing in shooters, and I miss that.
And what's particularly impressive about that, first of all, they have that beautiful shooting range where they have, like, three difficulties of challenges, so if you just want to go there and have a good time, you could. But the design of the guns was so stellar, such that the way they shoot this, like, even if you have a bunch of assault rifles, like you take the Callisto NTG or whatever it is, the AR-34, the K7 Avenger, I'm going to confuse the hell out of everyone who's listening, and like the RTG, what we haven't
RCP 150,
yeah, or 120, I think it is
120,
yeah, maybe 120. If you take all of those, I think even if my eyes were closed, just off the sound they make and the size of the clip, I would probably be able to pick out which one's which.
Yeah,
and definitely out of each gun has a little special ability.
Yeah.
And definitely based on those. So even where they had like, oh man, how do we differentiate between the six assault rifles that we have? Oh, well, they still did that excellently too.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
And like, and sort of the shooting range reminded me, another thing I really like is how they structure unlocks, right? Is, and these were back in the days when you actually had paper guides for these things. But everything you had to do to unlock, it was like, it's sort of like achievement hunting, but it was, here, you do this thing in this way, and now you've got a new gun. And that's much better than the now style of, here, pay us money and we'll give you another one.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, actually, speaking of paper guides, I was playing it a bit with my girlfriend the other day, and we were playing some multiplayer, and she got the, after you finish a game of multiplayer, it gives you a potential of four awards and also two like descriptors of how you did.
Yeah.
I got most honorable and she got most dishonorable. And then I informed her that according to the guy, dishonorable is the highest achievement you could get in that game because this is war. There's no room for honor here. Yeah. So if you have to shoot somebody in the back to take them down, you do that.
Oh yeah, and the multiplayer is so good.
The multiplayer is better. In that game, which came out, God, the early 2000s, somewhere around there, I think, maybe even in the 90s, late 90s, the multiplayer in that game, I will make the claim, it offline multiplayer holds up as better than really any 2019 single-player offline game. Like, the couch co-op in that game is just as good as it was then, and it still is a masterclass on how to do it versus games that are coming out now. Like, I bought Gears of War 4 solely because the Gears of War series previously had an offline multiplayer that was even close to as good as Perfect Dark's was. And Gears of War 4 did not have it. So,
yeah,
that's
essentially perfect.
And you know what? Even if you're going to be focusing on your online, it's really nice to have an offline where you can face computers. Because I don't want to get the game when it's on sale 6 months later and suck because everyone's been playing it online except for me.
Yeah.
I like practicing with the computers. They don't like to give you that option, but I really like it.
Yeah, no, I really do too. And the other thing I think is that they give you so many varieties. Like, there's obviously there's the easy, medium, hard, and that's just how much they cheat. But there are also a bunch of special ones. There's like a guy who's really slow, but he always starts with a shield. A guy who just obsessively uses one weapon.
Yeah, or a guy who's a pacifist, or a guy who only punches people. Like, they have both.
Yeah, the pugilist.
A dozen or so other ones. Yeah, so,
So there's like, there's a Rubik's Cube amount of ways to play the game.
You could do all the permutations and combinations of that. And between that and every single gun, like, you could, there's probably as many combinations that no one's played the same game of Perfect Dark twice. Like, you could almost make that claim.
Unless they did it on purpose, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If everyone had picked at random, no one will have played the same game.
It's the card shuffling thing. Okay. Yeah. So, speaking of games that we love, I was on, this is just a sad little note. This isn't really a story, but I was on Reddit the other day. I surf Ask Reddit when I can, and I saw a very funny one that was, what NPCs, well, like, your favorite NPCs. What NPCs went beyond their game? What are your favorite? And the top comment, naturally, was the Normandy crew.
Yes.
And so then after that, I read a little bit more down, and it was like, they went into individual characters, a lot of Mass Effect, a lot of Fallout, a lot of Skyrim, and then someone finally pointed out, man, BioWare and Bethesda sure did great here, and now look at them.
Yeah, I know.
So it's like, oh, geez, how the mighty have fallen. That's kind of sad. Okay, so I do want to, we've just a whole bunch of stuff. While we're on the Perfect Dark, I don't think we talked about in the previous 2 weeks, Destroy All Humans.
Yes.
He's officially getting a remake, remaster, whatever. It's going to have added graphics. It has a couple new gameplay quirks. Like, I watched a video on it. You can, like, dodge and move around easier. You have a shield to tell where the damage is coming from.
Okay.
That's handy. And it just has a few things that are smoothing out. And they actually took unused voice lines from the original game and were able to compile a brand new quest, like a little story thing to do.
Really?
So that was pretty impressive.
So do they have the same voice actors?
I don't think they brought them back. I think they totally used the old voice lines, but they had a bunch of ones that weren't used in the past that they were able to compile and put into a new quest line to make.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. So I'm probably going to check that out because, I mean, that's just an old... It's more of a sandbox. Back when sandboxes weren't like story things, it was just... It took us enough work to build this sandbox, so we're not really going to design stuff for you to do. It's just, hey, explore it.
Okay.
But one of the last... proper comedy games to come out. Like, that game is really funny.
Yes, yes it was.
So, yeah.
Oh, I was more just a fan of throwing cars with my mind.
Yeah, you know what? And that's a good point, too. Because it came out in the early days of the PS2 era, and that was one of the games that taught me how to use two sticks.
Mm.
Because I remember playing,
we
had Perfect Dark on the original PlayStation, like the PSX, and I remember it was that way that you controlled it was like it had to face in a certain direction, then she sort of squared up, and then you could shoot from there. Whereas Destroy All Humans, because you moved with one but could control what you're holding with your brain in the other one, that was one of the games that was like, hey, we need you to get good with this whole two-stick thing in order to play this game. So, pretty excited that's going to come back. Okay, so we got just a pile of news coming up. Let's move on to the fact that we talked about it very briefly. PlayStation 5 has been leaked, so to speak. We've seen footage of Spider-Man PS4 running on PlayStation 5. It looks buttery smooth. We've also seen Xbox. The new Xbox is called Project Scarlet right now. We know that Nintendo Switch is going to come out with new models at some point. And last but not least, we know that Google Stadia is going to be launching, I think, later this year, if not into next year. And they've released a ton of statistics. You can go to their website, Project Stream, and do an internet speed test on your connection to see what sort of games you'll be able to play with Stadia. So, it looks like the way that games are being played is going to change. First of all, I know you're not a hardware guy.
No.
So, knowing that, are you more interested in Stadia?
Not really. Because I think that Stadia is a continuance of a trend in gaming right now that I don't like.
Well, that's where we're going with next, actually, is my question. So continue on that.
Well, basically that, because Stadia, they're sort of moving toward being something like Netflix, mm-hmm. right? Where it's always on streaming service. And I've said this before on air. I want my video games to be like board games. I want them to be things that I buy and then they are mine now.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with a streaming service is that, you know, like, okay, Google's probably not going to go anywhere, but...
Well, I think that you're in the wrong direction, though, because you're talking about games, whereas this is the elimination of a console.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that? You could own the game, but you play it on Stadia.
But then if Stadia goes away, what do I play the game on?
Good question.
Yeah, if a storm knocks out our internet...
Well, yeah.
Now what do I do?
Well, yeah, but that's the risk you're taking by presuming that Stadia would be cheaper than spending, you know, $2,000 on the latest gaming PC hardware.
Yeah.
That's the question. Or, you know, like, these consoles, when they come out, they're usually like $500-$600.
Yeah.
So it's like $500-$600 or spend like $150 to upgrade my internet and then I can play it on my existing phone, computer, tablet, whatever. I definitely see the appeal of it.
Yeah, but I'm also, like, I'm really against subscriptions wherever I can get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, a console, or actually a good example because I just bought one, my computer may have cost me $1,000, but I'm not going to lose track of how much money I've spent on it. So I'm skeptical of that just because I don't like continually paying for anything.
Well, I think, okay, but you can say that because, for one... all three of us in this room share a Netflix subscription, yes. for example. Okay, so you can say that because you're still able to get stuff. Okay, but and for those of you who don't, Adam and I are obviously related given our shared last names, and we do share in the same house. So that helps us share some costs.
Yes.
But as we get older, that's going to become less and less likely. So you're going to have to make a choice between playing new games, getting new movies, getting new content, and paying full price, which is very expensive, or possibly doing a subscription service. Like, would you do a Netflix subscription on your own, for example?
I don't know. Like, I don't watch very much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're just going to cut yourself out and then miss out on all this media from various sources?
Probably.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Like, I'm paying for, the subscription I definitely will pay for is the internet.
Yeah.
and sort of I'm beyond that point. I'm like, I have paid for the internet. I don't want to pay for other things on the internet.
Interesting. Well, see, I'm torn on this one because on one hand, I know that I'm probably going to buy the consoles anyway. But on the other hand, I do see the, and maybe we'll have to get someone who's not as hardcore. Hey, Meg, you're in the room, but I know you're kind of attached to him. But as someone who doesn't necessarily, like, you've been wanting to play The Witcher ever since you've heard me boast about it for years.
And since I sort of started playing it a little bit as well, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. So,
take the bingo
you can
box.
Get, yeah, there it is. and we got our Mass Effect reference in there earlier. So there's a double whammy. But, so since this would take away your need to buy a nice gaming PC, whatever PC you've got now, if it's got the appropriate internet, let's assume it does, because if you just say no, it doesn't, then the topic ends.
Yeah, and that's the end of the conversation.
That's really boring radio. So let's assume your internet is good. All of a sudden, you pay $15 a month for a Stadia subscription. You can play The Witcher in full 1080p HD 60 frames per second on your existing PC. Does that appeal to you?
I think I'm kind of torn on the subject, to be honest, because paying in installments is always preferable for me because, you know, unlike the two of you, I can't just go out and buy something wholesale. You know, I've got other stuff to
exactly.
You have fork out. But at the same time, I'm sort of I don't like constantly paying for things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the long term I wouldn't like it, but in the short term, being able to access it that quickly is really appealing.
At some point, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Yeah. So this is where my next question would be: is that Xbox has talked about their Xbox Game Pass, and it's I think. You would probably have to have a sliding scale if you created like a little Microsoft Excel graph or something like that. Yeah. A sliding scale of how much it would have to cost per month to be able to do it. Because there's, I mean, every year we look back on the games that came out that year and we're like, oh man, I meant to play that.
Yeah.
Or man, I meant to do that or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we can play maybe half of the games that we want to. And the other half of the time we either wait for them to go on Steam sale or we just figure, eh. Gotta bite the bullet, can't experience that. But there are some really good... Like, I would love if I could just have hopped on and played Monster Hunter World when it was over the world with Matt. That's an easy example. Or, like, Neo, right? Neo, and also Nier Automata.
Yep.
There's a ton of games that are in that. Couldn't quite make the cut, but if it's like, hey, $15 a month and you got all these games available to you on Stadia, I think I would... It's like movies. So Netflix is the best. I still buy movies that I really, really want to watch whenever I want to. But for most things that I'm only kind of interested in, if I'm paying like $100, $200 a month, or not a month, $200 a year, maybe, so like $20 a month, I think even that would be pretty generous to be able to play
whatever you want.
A significant amount more games. I think I do find that appealing.
I think for me, it has to come down to. How much would I end up spending overall?
Mm-hmm.
If I would spend virtually the same amount I would on a console to get this experience, then, you know, over the years or whatever, then maybe it's worth it or less. But, you know, you're buying new consoles constantly when they come out. So where's the balance?
Exactly.
Where's the cost
balance?
So
it's if you could do that, it's like, well, you know, I don't need to get the new console, which would...
And that's sort of the thing, you know, how much would I spend to constantly get the newer console versus how much would I ultimately spend on this subscription? And if they're...
The new console and the games, if we're talking about, particularly with the Xbox Game Pass, which is all on computers. So that's why this is like...
Yeah.
Like active, like right now, because there's so many games on the Microsoft Game Pass that you can play on your computer like now. Like I got it already for the one month initial charge. And I'm... honestly might keep it for like the $17 a month, because I looked in there, it's like 200 games, half of which I would love to play. I just don't have the time. Yeah. So it's like, will I have the time? But it still makes sense. In a weird way, I want to have the way I receive my games, I'm more okay with that being a constant service than the games themselves. So I want to play complete finished games mm-hmm. on a constantly flowing service.
I think the other appeal for me that sort of tips me in favor of this sort of thing is that you can't damage it. You can damage a disc. You can damage, you know, when you're talking the older consoles, you could damage the cartridges or whatever. And so you would have to replace them if there were damage to it. You can't if it's on a computer, which is why Steam is also so appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, sort of the counterpoint to that is that the problem, the biggest problem I have with the subscription thing is that I don't trust the video game industry. Mm-hmm. As far as I can throw it.
Not yeah, that's what I mean. So yeah. Your opinions are based on an inherent skepticism.
Yes. But that's sort of the thing is, you're right. You can't damage a disc. But if you damage a disc, you can go out and buy another disc. If Steam decides tomorrow, we're out, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
I have no recourse. And I have, like, just so many companies have closed down. Like, EA eating companies alive mm-hmm. and then closing them is a meme.
Yeah.
So I have no trust in the video game industry. So I in this case, I'm like, I'm the guy who's always crying out that it's going to be a nuclear war.
Yeah.
Like, I want to build a bunker so that no matter what happens externally, because it could be anything, I'm safe.
Interesting. Okay. So we're going to, that's definitely a topic that we're going to be touching on more as we get into the summer months where nothing is coming out and we have to have a debate about something. We'll reopen that can of worms. But there are a couple things that I want to talk about, one of which is specifically why Mega's here. But the next one, and speaking of EA and speaking of things that we hate, EA made some comments.
And EA made some comments.
I'm gonna play the ultimate devil's advocate in that I'm kind of torn on the EA comments, but it's not in the direction that EA would like me to be. So EA made some comments, and basically they were brought before a United Kingdom ethics board for the gaming. You can look up what the exact thing is, yeah. But it's like a media ethics board. And they were asked about loot boxes. The EA person said, "We don't like to think of them as loot boxes. We want to think of them as surprise mechanics. And when you go to a store, you can still get something like a Kinder Surprise, for example, or a Hatchimal, where you will buy a product without knowing what's inside and you enjoy the surprise, and we think of them as quite ethical." I think most people, including Meg, who's holding your face, would think that's garbage. And by the way, like us on Facebook and subscribe to us on podcasts for wherever you get your podcasts, because on the podcast we can now do special bonus episodes that are explicit. I mean, we can swear, and that might be the best place to talk about EA. But since we're keeping it PG on internet or on the university radio here, we're not going to go down that road.
Yeah.
But my point here is they didn't remind me of Hatchimals or Kinder Surprise. What they remind me of is like card packs. So, like, hockey cards, baseball cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Pokemon cards. To me, like, I watched a couple of videos of people refuting it and being like, yay, what do they know? And I'm thinking, I haven't heard a good argument that says that those card packs, like, I don't think that what EA is doing is right. I think it is definitely gambling. But I definitely think those card packs are also gambling. Like, I think this should go, and they should take card packs with them. Because if you're going to make this argument, the fact that they're being made with cards that you can buy in any corner store, I think that argument can be made just as easily because it's very similar. They're also for a game.
Yep.
If you get a really good one, you can dominate your friends in that game. It just so happens that this was a little more old-fashioned, and this is easier to access since it's at home. But I know you have some steaming hot takes here. You got a couple minutes. We're going to delve deeper into this in another week, but what do you think of the comments, Adam?
I think you're absolutely right, and I think part of the reason I got out of trading card games was because of that thing. And like when you're, because most of this, like when we were big into both Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh, because we were for a while, like, you know, you get money from your parents and you go down and buy these things. But people were spending like a lot of money.
Like easily hundreds of dollars.
Like, yeah, it was a lot of money. And eventually I got to a point where like I cannot afford to play Yu-Gi-Oh anymore.
Pay to win.
Yeah. And so absolutely, I think that, yeah, EA's, the loot boxes should go, and they should take trading card games with them.
And what's weird is that It's going to wrap back and be the snake that bites itself. That's going to be you. You're going to be the Ouroboros here. Because what we started to do is start to buy the games digitally. So I would buy a Yu-Gi-Oh game. Like, we've bought a couple Yu-Gi-Oh yeah. card games on the DS and then one on the computer, where you can get all the cards in the game and then play with them purely in the game.
Yeah.
Right? Which you're in favor of.
Yes.
Do you see the trap I'm setting for you?
Yes.
gotcha. So earlier you wanted to have things physically, so if something happened to the game, you would still have them. But in this particular case, you're more okay having it digitally.
Well,
interesting.
No, I still want to have stuff. Like, because I don't really care about having, whether I have a physical copy of the disc.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Steam is kind of difficult because without, but because Steam is a launcher, and it's a way you can get games, but you can also launch them outside of Steam.
Yeah.
My point is, I have the tech, I have the proprietary piece on my computer.
Yeah.
So if Steam shut down tomorrow, I would lose access to the store, but I would have the games I bought on it, because I don't have to run them via Steam.
True.
So I'm all in favor of that, especially for trading card games. I think getting a digital version is definitely the way to go. Although they will put loot boxes in those too,
probably. Well, that's why we just got to support games that don't have loot boxes, which yes. is something like God of War and Spider-Man. Those should be on our list, right below. By the way, Mass Effect and The Witcher 3. God of War and Spider-Man are going to get added to the Hall of Fame, where it's a rare week that we don't mention them because they're so excellent. Okay, so we only have a few minutes here. There is some stuff I want to get off, and then we're going to finish off on this kind of big Harry Potter thing that happened today. We'll have a more in-depth review of that next week, probably, or if not the weeks coming after we've had more time to sink our teeth into it. But there's a couple things coming up. First of all, I believe it's tomorrow, and now with my brain being fried, I can't remember if it's tomorrow or Wednesday. But at 5:30, we're going to go with tomorrow, but you can go onto UMFM's and find out. At 5:30 is Beyond the Panel. It's the wonderful, wonderful comic book show. I'm just double-checking. Yes, it's from 5:30 to 6:30. It's Beyond the Panel every Tuesday. First of all, you should listen to them anyway. But tomorrow in particular, you should listen to them because I will be a guest on there.
Ooh.
And we're going to be talking about some Superman comics. And we're going to be revisiting the topic of how the heck do you make a Superman game? So it's going to be, I'm sure, a very good discussion with some people who I'll hopefully bring some video game knowledge, but some people who know way more about the Superman lore than me. So that should be a very fun discussion. Listen to it tomorrow, Tuesday, from 5 to 5:30, or from 5:30 to 6:30.
Yes,
I'm on the autopilot here. Okay. Harry Potter Wizards Unite came out. I've seen like a trailer for it, and I watched some guy's crappy YouTube video. It looks exactly like Pokemon Go, but with Harry Potter.
That's my experience. I played for 10 minutes.
It's Pokemon Go Plus. And having recently logged
Well, careful
into,
there, because that's an actual thing.
Well, no. Having logged into Pokemon Go recently, it has a lot of the features they've put into that with more.
Right, but the Pokemon Ball Go Plus is the actual Pokeball that you can buy
and
control
it with. Yes, it is. So it is, yes. I realized that after
plus.
I said it.
Pokemon Go A Plus.
Yes.
So what are the, just compared, because we're, again, short on time and it just came out today, so early impressions, but what are the immediate differences from it to Pokemon Go? So if you played Pokemon Go, what can you expect to be different in this one?
Well, the big thing is there's not a ton of difference in terms of the, you know, the gyms and things like that have transitioned over. But you can find, for example, potions ingredients just in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Click on it, pick it up. It's yours. And they've actually, one feature that I liked, which was something I really wanted when I was playing Pokemon Go actively, is they now have a countdown timer when you go to an inn, which is similar to their Pokestops. And so you know when you can get more from it, which is one thing that I was missing. And so sort of a lot of the other features they do have are very similar to what the updates for Pokemon Go have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's different tasks you have to do, different challenges to complete. But perhaps my favorite thing that I haven't had a chance to explore yet is the idea of a fortress.
A fortress.
Which has taken the gym that they had in Pokemon Go and made it a tower you have to climb and defeat enemies in a time limit to eventually defeat it. So I haven't had a chance to explore that yet, though, which is a shame, because I only got to see one on the way here.
Okay, so since you two are, and we'll have more of a Harry Potter roundtable, pun intended, sort of, because it's medieval themed, I guess, at a future date. But since you two are both diehard Harry Potter fans, early, like, thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't care what rating you give it, like 5 out of 10 hats. where would you rate this so far in your general enjoyment of it? And particularly in comparison to the previous one that came out.
Oh, okay. That's two different numbers. In comparison to the previous one that came out, I give it 10 sorting hats out of 10. But as a game in itself, it's not fun.
Oh.
And the reason it's not fun is because no mobile game is fun. They're just addiction pleasure receptor triggers.
Okay, Meg, do you have something more positive?
If you're looking for something to sort of play on the bus, which is what I want most of the time, it's great for that. It's a game that's idle, but the one thing that I absolutely love, and I was sort of squealing about it in the car, is this is the first game on mobile for Harry Potter of the two of them that has gotten the wand movements correct.
There you go.
The
wand movements are correct. So we are super duper out of time, though. So we're going to keep talking about Harry Potter next week. But stay tuned for a more delicious episode of TV Talkers coming your way. Stay tuned. We'll see you guys next week.